the other sort and seek it out. It's as if Machiavelli had written a cookery book. Even so, there is no excuse for putting pineapple on pizza. He stepped out into the flickering lamplight of the street, shaking his head. "You actually eat the pies here," he said mournfully, and looked up into the face of the warder. There were several watchmen behind him. "That's him!" Rincewind nodded cheerfully. "Good day," he said. Two little thuds were his homemade sandals bouncing on the street. The sea steamed, and crackling balls of lightning zipped across its surface like drops of water on a hot plate. The waves were too big to be waves, but about the right size for mountains. Ponder looked up from the deck only once, just as the boat began to slide down a trough that gaped like a canyon. Next to him, and gripping his leg, the Dean groaned. "You know about this sort of thing, Ponder," he growled as they hit the trough, and then began the stomach-twisting climb to the next crest. "Are we going to die?"
"I don't think so, Dean."
"Pity." Rincewind heard whistles blowing behind him by the time he reached the corner, but he never let that sort of thing worry him. This was a city. Cities were so much easier. He was a creature of cities. There were so many places to... Whistles started blowing up ahead as well. The crowds were thicker here, and most people were heading in the same direction. But Rincewind liked crowds to run through. As they pursued, he had novelty on his side and could shoulder his way past the unsuspecting, who then turned around and milled about and complained and were definitely not in the right frame of mind to greet the people following him. Rincewind could run through a crowd like a ball on a bagatelle board and always got an extra go. Downhill was best. That's where they generally put docks, so as to have them closer to the water. Dodging and ducking across the streets brought him suddenly to the waterside. There were a few boats there. They were on the small side for a stowaway, but there were running footsteps in the dark. These watchmen were too good. This wasn't how it was supposed to go. They weren't supposed to double back. They weren't supposed to think. He ran in the only direction left, along the waterfront. There was a building there. At least it, well, it had to be a building. No one could have left an open box of tissues that big. Rincewind felt that a building should be a box with a pointed lid on it, basically, and it should be the approximate colour of whatever the local mud was. On the other hand, as the philosopher Li Tin Weedle once remarked, it is never wise to object to the decor of a hidey-hole. He bounded up the steps and circled around the strange white building. It seemed to be some kind of music hall. Opera, by the sound of it, although it was a damn funny place to sing opera. You couldn't imagine ladies with horns in a building that looked about to set sail. But no time to wonder about that. There was a door with some rubbish bins outside it, and here was the door open.
"You from the agency, mate?"
Rincewind peered into the steam.
"And I hope you can do puddings, because Sheffy's banging his head on the wall."
Went on a figure emerging from the wisps. It was wearing a tall white hat. "No worries," said Rincewind hopefully. "Ah, this is a kitchen, is it?"
"You pulling my leg?"
"Only I thought it was some kind of opera house or something."
"Best bloody opera house in the world, mate. Come on this way."
It wasn't a very big kitchen, and like most of the ones Rincewind had been in, it was full of men working very hard at cross-purposes.
"The boss upstairs only decided to throw a big dinner for the prima donna," said the cook, forcing his way through the throng, "and all of a sudden Charlie sees the pudding staring at him in the face."
"Ah, right," said Rincewind, on the basis that sooner or later he'd be given a clue.
"Boss says you can do the pudding for her, Charlie."
"Just like that, eh?
He says it ought to be the best one yet, Charlie."
"No worries.
He says the great Nunco invented the strawberry Sackville for Dame Wendy Sackville, and the famous chef Imposo created the apple glazier for Dame Margarine Glazier, and your own father, Charlie, honoured Dame Janine Ormolu with the orange Ormolu, and tonight, Charlie, it's your big chance."
The cook shook his head as he reached the table where a small man in a white uniform was sobbing, uncontrollably, into his hands. There was a stack of empty beer cans in front of him.
"Poor bastard's been on the beer ever since, and we thought we'd better get someone in. I'm a steak and prawns man myself."
"So, you want me to make a pudding named after an opera singer," said Rincewind. "That's the tradition, is it?"
"Yeah, and you'd better not let Charlie down, mate. It's not his fault."
"Oh, well,"
Rincewind thought about puddings. Basically, it was just fruit and cream and custard, wasn't it? And cakes and stuff. He couldn't see where the problem lay.
"No worries," he said. "I think I can knock up something right away."
The kitchen became silent as the scurrying cooks stopped to watch him.
"First," said Rincewind, "what fruit have we got?"
"Peaches was all we could find at this time of night."
"No worries. And we've got some cream?"
"Yep, of course."
"Fine, fine. Then all I need to know is the name of the lady in question."
He felt the silence open up.
"She's a beaut singer, mind you," said a cook in a defensive tone of voice.
"Good. And her name?" said Rincewind.
That's the trouble, see," said another cook.
"Why?"
End of side 12. Side 13. Ponder opened his eyes. The water was calm, or at least calmer than it had been. There were even patches of blue sky above, although cloud banks were criss-crossing the air as if each were in possession of its own bag of wind. His mouth tasted as though he'd been sucking a tin spoon. Around him, some of the wizards managed to push themselves to their knees. The dean frowned, removed his hat, and pulled out a small crab.
"It's a good boat," he muttered.
The green mast stem still stood, although the leaf sail looked ragged. Nevertheless, the boat was tacking nicely against the wind off the continent. It was a red wall, glowing under the thunder light. Rid-Kalle got uncertainly to his feet and pointed to it.
"Not far now," he said.
The dean actually growled.
"I've just about had enough of that insufferable cheerfulness," he said. "So, just shut up, will you?"
"Enough of that. I am your Arch-Chancellor, Dean," said Rid-Kalle.
"Well, let's just talk about that, shall we?" said the Dean, and Ponder saw the nasty gleam in his eye. "This is hardly the time, Dean. Exactly on what basis are you giving orders, Rid-Kalle? You're the Arch-Chancellor of what, precisely? Unseen University doesn't even exist. Tell him, Senior Wrangler."
"I don't have to if I don't want to," sniffed the Senior Wrangler.
"What? What?" snapped the Dean. "I don't believe I have to take orders from you, Dean."
When the bursar climbed up on deck a minute later, the boat was already rocking. It was hard to say how many factions there were, since a wizard is capable of being a faction all by himself. But there were broadly two sides, both liaisons being as stable as an egg on a seesaw. What amazed Ponder Stibbons when he thought about it later was that no one had yet resorted to using magic. The wizards had spent a lot of time in an atmosphere where a cutting remark did more damage than a magic sword, and for sheer malign pleasure, a well-structured memo could do more real damage than a fireball every time. Besides, no one had their staff, and no one had any spells handy, and in those circumstances, it's easier to hit someone, although in the case of wizards, non-magical fighting usually means flailing ineffectually at the opponent while trying to keep out of his way. The bursar's fixed smile faded a little.
"I got 3% more than you in my finals."
"Oh, and how do you know that, Dean?"
"I looked at the paper when you were appointed Arch-Chancellor."
"What? After 40 years?
"An examination is an examination."
The bursar began.
"Ye gods, that's pretty. That's just the sort of thing I'd expect from a student who even had a separate pen for red ink."
"Ha! At least I didn't spend all my time drinking and betting and staying out all hours."
"Huh! I bloody well did, yes, and I learned the ways of the world, and I still got nearly as many marks as you in spite of a prize-winning hangover, you puffed-up barrel of lard."
Oh, it's personal remarks now, is it?"
"Absolutely. Two chairs. Let's have some personal remarks. We always said that walking behind you made people seasick." "I wonder if at this point," said the bursar.
The air crackled around the wizards. A wizard in a foul temper attracts magic like overripe fruit gets flies.
"You think I'd make a better Arch-Chancellor, don't you, bursar?" said the dean.
The bursar blinked his watery eyes.
The two of you, many good points. Perhaps this is the time to make a common cause."
They spent just a moment considering this.
"Well said," said the dean.
"Got a point," said Rid-Kalle, "because, you know, I've never liked the lecturer in recent runes very much. Smirks all the time,
Grid Cully agreed. Not a member of the team.
Oh, really?
The lecturer in recent runes put on a particularly evil smirk.
At least I got higher marks than you, and am noticeably thinner than the dean. Although a great many things are. Tell them, Stibbons.
That's Mr. Stibbons, fat man!
Ponder heard the voice. He knew it was his. He felt as though he was hypnotized. He could stop any time he liked. It was just that he didn't quite feel like it.
Could I just say...
the bursar tried.
Shut up, bursar!
Roared Rid Cully.
Sorry, sorry, sorry.
Rid Cully waved a finger at the dean.
Now you... listen to me!
A crimson spark leapt off his hand, left a trail of smoke past the dean's ear, and hit the mast, which exploded. The dean took a deep breath, and when the dean took a deep breath, appreciably less air was left in the atmosphere. It was let out with a roar.
You dare fire magic at me?
Rid Cully was staring at his hand.
But I...
Ponder finally managed to force the words out between teeth that were trying to clamp together.
Magic's ejecting us.
What? What are you gurgling about, man?
Said the lecturer in recent runes.
I'll show you magic, you pompous clown,
screamed the dean, raising both hands.
It's the magic talking,
Ponder managed, grabbing one arm.
You don't want to blow the Arch-Chancellor to little pieces, dean.
Yes, I damn well do.
Excuse me, I don't wish to intrude.
Mrs. Whitlow's head appeared at the hatchway.
What is it, Mrs. Whitlow?
Yelled Ponder, as a blast from the dean's hand sizzled over his head.
I know you are engaged on university business, but should there be all these cracks? The water is coming in.
Ponder looked down. The deck creaked under his feet.
We're sinking, he said. You stupid old...
He bit down on the words.
The boat is cracking up as fast as we are. Look, it's going yellow.
The green was leaching from the deck like sunlight from a stormy sky.
It's his fault,
the dean screamed. Ponder raced to the side. There were crackling noises all around him. The important thing was to settle his mind and be calm, and possibly think of nice things like blue skies and kittens, preferably ones which weren't about to drown.
Listen, he said, if we don't sink our differences, they'll sink us, understand? The boat's ripening or something, and we're a long way from land, do you understand? And there could be sharks down there.
He looked down, he looked up.
There's sharks down there, he shouted.
The boat tilted as the wizards joined him.
Are there sharks, do you think?
Said Rid Cully.
Could be tuna, said the dean.
Behind them, the remains of the sail fell away.
How can you reliably tell the difference?
Said the senior wrangler.
You could count their teeth on the way down,
sighed Ponder. But at least no one was throwing magic around anymore. You could take the wizards out of Unseen University, but you couldn't take the university out of the wizards. The boat listed still further as Mrs. Whitlow looked over the side.
What happens if we fall in the water?
She said.
We must, devise a plan, said Rid Cully. Dean, form a working party to consider our survival in unknown, shark-infested waters, will you?
Should we swim for the shore?
Said Mrs. Whitlow.
I was good at swimming as a girl.
Rid Cully gave her a warm smile.
All in good time, Mrs. Whitlow, he said, but your suggestion has been taken aboard. It's going to be the only thing that is in a minute, said Ponder.
And what exactly will your role be, Arch-Chancellor?
The dean snarled.
I have defined your objectives, said Rid Cully. It is up to you to consider the options. In that case, said the dean, I move that we abandon ship.
What for?
Said the chair of indefinite studies. The sharks?
That is a secondary problem, said the dean.
That's right, said Ponder. We can always vote to abandon shark.
The ship lurched suddenly. The senior wrangler struck a heroic pose.
I will save you, Mrs. Whitlow, he cried, and swept her off her feet,
or at least made the effort. But the senior wrangler was likely built for a wizard, and Mrs. Whitlow was a fine figure of a woman, and furthermore, the wizard's grip was limited by the fact that there were very few areas of Mrs. Whitlow that he dared actually touch. He did his best with some outlying regions, and managed to lift her slightly.
All this did was transfer the entire weight of wizard and housekeeper to the senior wrangler's quite small feet, which went through the deck like a steel bar. The boat, dry as tinder now, soft as wood punk, fell apart very gently. The water was extremely cold. Spray filled the air as they struggled. A piece of wreckage hit Ponder on the head and pushed him under, into a blue world where his ears went gloing, gloing. When he struggled to the surface again, this noise turned out to be an argument. Once again, the sheer magic of Unseen University triumphed. When treading water in a circle of sharks, a wizard will always consider other wizards to be the most immediate danger.
"Don't blame me. He was... well, I think he was asleep."
"You think?
He was a mattress, a red one. He's the only librarian we've got. How could you be so thoughtless?"
shouted Ridcully. He took a deep breath and dived.
"Abandon sea," shouted the bursar cheerfully.
Ponder shuddered as something big and black and streamlined rose out of the water in front of him. It sank back into the foam and flopped over. Other shapes were bobbing to the surface all around the frantically treading wizards. The dean tapped one.
"Well, these sharks don't seem anything like as dangerous as I expected," he said.
"They're the seeds out of the boat," said Ponder. "Get on top of them, quickly."
He was sure that something had brushed his leg. In those circumstances, a man finds unexpected agility. Even the dean managed to get aboard, after a revolving, foamy period when man and seed fought for supremacy. Ridcully surfaced in a shower of spray.
"It's no good," he spluttered. "I went down as far as I could. There's no sign of him."
"Try and get on a seed, Arch-Chancellor, do," said the senior wrangler.
Ridcully flailed at a passing shark.
"They won't attack you if you make a lot of noise and splash around," he said.
"I thought that's when they will attack you, sir," Ponder called out.
"Ah, an interesting practical experiment," said the dean, craning to watch.
Ridcully hauled himself onto one of the seeds.
"What a mess! I suppose we can float to land, though," he said. "Where's Mrs. Whitlow, gentlemen?"
They looked around.
"Oh, no!" the senior wrangler moaned. "She's swimming for the shore."
They followed his gaze and could just see a hairdo moving jerkily yet determinedly towards the shore in what Ridcully would have probably referred to as a chest stroke.
"I don't call that very practical," said the dean.
"What about the sharks?"
"Well, they're swimming around under us, in fact," said the senior wrangler as the seeds rocked.
Ponder looked down.
"They appear to be leaving now that we're not dangling our legs in the water," he said. "They're heading for the shore, too."
"Well, she knew the risks when she got the job," said the dean.
"What?" said the senior wrangler. "Are you saying that before you apply for the job of housekeeper of a university, you should seriously consider being eaten by sharks on the shores of some mysterious continent thousands of years before you are born?"
"She didn't ask many questions at the interview, I know that."
"Actually, we are worrying unduly," said the chair of indefinite studies. "Sharks have a very undeserved reputation as man-eaters. There is not a single authenticated case of a shark attacking anyone, despite what you may have heard. They are sophisticated and peaceful creatures with a rich family life, and far from being ominous harbingers of doom, have reputedly even befriended the occasional lost traveller. As hunters, they are, of course, very efficient, and a full-grown shark can bring down even a moose with...
He looked at their faces.
I think I might perhaps have got them confused with wolves," he mumbled. "I have, haven't I?"
They nodded in unison.
Sharks are the other ones, aren't they?" he went on. The vicious and merciless killers of the sea that don't even stop to chew."
They nodded again.
"Oh dear. Where can I put my face?"
"Some distance from a shark," said Ridcully briskly. "Come on, gentlemen, that's our housekeeper. Do you wish to make your own beds in future? Fireballs again, I think. She's gone too far away."
A red shape rocketed out of the sea beside Ridcully, curled through the air and slid below the surface again like a razor blade cutting into silk.
"What was that? Who of you did that?" he said.
A bow wave ripped its way to the cluster of triangular fins like a bowling ball heading down an alley. Then the water erupted.
"Ye gods, look at the way it's going at those sharks. Is it a monster?
It's a dolphin, surely. With red hair? Surely it's not.
A stricken shark barreled past the senior wrangler. Behind it, the water exploded again into the big red grin of the only dolphin ever to have a leathery face and orange hair all over its body.
"Whoop!" said the librarian. "Well done, old chap!" shouted Ridcully across the water. "I said you wouldn't let us down!"
"No, actually, you didn't, sir. You said you thought..."
Ponder began.
"Good choice of shape, too," Ridcully continued loudly. "Now, if you can sort of nudge us all together, then perhaps you could push us towards the shore. Are we all still here? Where's the bursar?"
The bursar was a small dot away on the right, paddling dreamily along.
"Well, he'll get there," said Ridcully. "Come along, let's get on to dry land."
"That sea," said the senior wrangler nervously, staring ahead as the seeds were jockeyed towards the shore like a string of overloaded barges. "That sea... does it look as though it's girting to you?"
"Certainly it's a very big sea," said the lecturer in recent runes. "You know, I don't think it's just the rain that's making the roaring. There may be a spot of surf."
"A few waves won't do us any harm," said Ridcully. "At least water is soft."
Ponder felt the board underneath him rise and fall as a long swell passed. An odd shape for a seed, he had to admit. Of course, nature paid a lot of attention to seeds, equipping them with little wings and sails and flotation chambers and other devices necessary to give them an edge over all other seeds. These were just flattish versions of the librarian's current shape, which was obviously intended for moving through water very fast. He said to the universe in general. It meant, "I wonder if we've really thought about this."
"Can't see any rocks ahead," the dean observed.
"Girting," mused the senior wrangler, as if the word was nagging at him. "That's a very definite sort of word, isn't it? There's a certain martial sort of sound."
It occurred to Ponder that water is not exactly soft. He'd never been much of a one for sports when he was a boy, but he remembered playing with the other local lads and joining in all their games, such as push Poncy Stibbons into the nettles, or tie up Stibbo and go home for tea. And there had been the time at the old swimming hole when they'd thrown him in off the top of the cliff, and it had hurt. The flotilla gradually caught up with Mrs. Whitlow, who was holding on to a floating tree and treading water. The tree already had its fair share of occupants, birds, lizards, and for some reason a small camel trying to make itself comfortable in the branches. The swell was heavier now. There was a deep, continuous booming underlying the noise of the rain.
"Ah, Mrs. Whitlow," said the senior wrangler, "and what a nice tree. Even got leaves on, look."
"We've come to save you," said the dean in the face of the evidence.
"I think it might be a good idea if Mrs. Whitlow hung on to a seed," said Ponder. "I really think that really might be a really good idea. I think the waves might be slightly big."
"Girting," said the senior wrangler morosely.
He looked towards the beach, and it wasn't ahead of them any more. It was down there. It was at the bottom of a green hill, and the green was made of water, and for some reason it was getting taller.
"Look," said Rincewind, "why can't you tell me her name? Presumably lots of people know it. I mean, it must be put on the posters and so on. It's only a name, isn't it? I don't see the problem."
The cooks looked at one another. Then one coughed and said,
"She's... well, her name is... Dame Nelly. But..."
"But what?"
"Her name is But..."
Mincewind's lips moved silently.
"Oh," he said. The cooks nodded.
"Has Charlie drunk all the beer, do you think?" Mincewind said, sitting down.
"Maybe we can find some bananas, Ron," said another cook.
Rincewind's eyes unfocused and his lips moved again.
"Did you tell Charlie that?" he said at last.
"Yep. Just before he broke down."
There was the sound of running feet outside. One of the cooks looked out of the window.
"It's just the watch, probably after some poor bastard."
Rincewind moved back slightly so that he was not obvious from the window. Ron shuffled his feet.
"I reckon if we went and saw Idle Ahmed and got him to open up his shop, we might get some..."
"Strawberries?" said Rincewind.
The cooks shuddered.
There was another sob from Charlie. All his life's been waiting for this, said a cook. I call it bloody unfair. Remember when that little soprano left to marry the drover? He was miserable all week.
Yeah, Lisa Delight, said Ron. A bit wobbly in mid-range, but definitely showing promise.
He was really pinning his hopes on her. He said a name like that had even worked with rhubarb.
Charlie howled.
I think, said Rincewind slowly and thoughtfully.
Yes?
I think I can see a way.
You can?
Even Charlie raised his head.
Well, you know how it is. The outsider sees most of the game. Let's go with the peaches, the cream, a bit of ice cream if you can make it, maybe a dash of brandy. Let's see now.
Coconut flakes, said Charlie, looking up.
Yes, why not?
Some tomato sauce, maybe?
I think not.
You'd better get a move on, they're halfway through the last act, said Ron.
She'll be all right, said Rincewind.
Okay, halve the peaches, put them in a bowl with the other things, and then add the brandy, and voila!
That's some kind of foreign stuff, said Charlie. I don't think we've got any of that voila.
Just add twice as much brandy, then, said Rincewind.
And there it is.
Yeah, but what's it called?
Said Ron.
I'm coming to that, said Rincewind. Bowl, please, Charlie. Thank you.
He held it aloft.
Gentlemen, I give you the Peach Nelly.
A saucepan bubbled on a stove. Apart from that insistent little noise and the distant strains of the opera, the room fell silent.
What do you think? Said Rincewind brightly.
It's different, said Charlie. I'll grant you that.
But it's not exactly commemorative, is it?
Said Ron.
The world is full of Nellies.
On the other hand, would you prefer it if everyone remembered the alternative? Said Rincewind. Do you want to be associated in any way with the peach but?
There was a howl as Charlie burst into tears again.
Put like that doesn't sound too bad, said Ron. Peach Nelly, yeah?
You could use bananas, said Rincewind.
Ron's lips moved silently.
Nah, he said. Let's go with the peaches.
Rincewind brushed himself off.
Glad to be of service, he said. Tell me, how many ways are there out of here?
Busy night for everyone, what with the galah and everything, said Ron.
Not my taste, of course, but it does bring in the visitors.
Yeah, and the hanging in the morning, said Charlie.
I was planning to miss that, said Rincewind.
Now, if you'll just...
I, for one, hope he escapes, said Charlie.
I'm with you on that, said Rincewind.
Heavy boots walked past the door and stopped. He could hear distant voices.
They say he fought a dozen policemen, said Ron.
Three, said Rincewind.
It was three, I heard. Someone told me. Not a dozen, three.
There, got to be more than three. Got to be a lot more than three for a bold bush ranger like that one. Renzo, they call him. I heard where this bloke arrived from Did You Bring a Beer Along and said Rinso sheared 100 sheep in 5 minutes.
Oh, I don't believe that, said Rincewind.
They say he's a wizard, but that can't be true, because you never catch one of them doing a proper job of work.
Well, in fact, all right, but a bloke who works up at the jail says he's got this strange brown stuff, which gives him enormous strength.
He was only beer soup, shouted Rincewind. I mean, he added, that's what I heard.
Ron gave him a lopsided look.
You look a bit like a wizard, he said.
Someone knocked heavily on the door.
You're wearing those dresses they wear,
Ron went on, without taking his eyes off Rincewind.
Go and open the door, Sid.
Rincewind backed away, reached behind him to a table laden with knives, and found his fingers closing on a handle. Yes. He hated the idea of weapons. They always, always upped the ante, but they did impress people. The door opened. Several men peered in, and one of them was the jailer.
That's him!
I warn you, I'm a desperate man, Rincewind said, bringing his hand around.
Most of the cooks dived for cover.
That's a ladle, mate, said a watchman kindly, but bloody plucky all the same. Good on you. What do you think, Charlie? I reckon it's never going to be said that a bold larrikin like him was run to earth in a kitchen of mine.
said Charlie. He picked up a cleaver in one hand and the dish of peach Nelly in the other. "You nip out of the door, Rinso, and we'll talk to these policemen." "Suits us," said the watchman. "It's not a proper last stand, just having a punch-up in a kitchen. We'll give you a count to ten, all right?" Once again,